The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Golden State Warriors Insider, Monty Poole.
What up? This is Logan Murdoch, NBC Sports Bay Area's Warriors reporter, in for Monty Poole. Today on the Warriors Insiders Podcast, presented by Wendy's, we have Tom Habistro of NBC Sports and Jamie Hudson of NBC Sports Northwest, and talk a little Blazers Warriors going into game two. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. How will the Warriors defend the pick and roll with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard? And how will the Blazers respond going into game two? So a lot of that on this podcast. Be sure to enjoy it. Again, we're sponsored by Wendy's and the Warriors Insiders Podcast. So here we go.
All right, game one is in the books. Western Conference Finals between the Golden State Warriors and the Portland Trail Blazers. Warriors win big, earning their seventh straight postseason win over the Blazers. But first, I want to get the full report on the important stuff from Warriors practice that just finished up. Logan Murdoch, our Warriors insider, you were there. We got a big series here, and I ask you what's on everyone's mind. What does Klay Thompson love more, his dog Rocco or the city of Portland?
I mean, that's a close tie, man. I don't know. That's really tough. I know that he had a 3-minute love affair with Portland all day at practice today. He just talked about how he wants to go to Burgerville, how he wants to go up to Vancouver and just tap in with his family. He was just like really juiced. It was probably the most engaged we've had Klay in a presser all season, because somebody asked about Portland and he was just really excited to give us an answer. He even said he liked the rain. He even said that he might jump into the Oregon coast. That's how excited he was today at Warriors practice. So it was good Klay today.
Wait, so Jamie, did you know this about Klay Thompson, that he's obsessed with Portland?
I knew he always talked fondly of Portland. And hey, I get it. Burgerville is very good, you guys. You got to try it next time you're there.
I got to tap in.
Wait, I've never been to Burgerville, so give me the scouting report.
Strawberry milkshake is my favorite. But they also have, like, so many seasonal things. So, like, a seasonal type of fries. They're very top of the line as far as a burger joint goes, and I love it.
That's awesome. Well, I think it kind of sounds like here in Charlotte we have what's called, why am I blanking out on the name of this place? I used to go every single, Cookout. Thank you. Cookout. It's kind of like Burgerville. Is it like fast food?
Oh my goodness, Cookout is amazing.
Yes, exactly, Logan. Logan knows what I'm talking about.
I love Cookout because you can get 67 items for $10.
That's exactly right. You get that, and there's like a list of like 80 different milkshakes, and at 3 in the morning, after work or after going out or whatever you're doing at 3 a.m, it's always a good idea. Well, that's just a good palate cleanser, pun intended, for this conversation, because the story of game one was all about guarding Steph Curry and Dame Lillard, the two leading scorers who love to fire it up from deep. The teams took two wildly different approaches. The Blazers seemed to sag off of Curry, which is a bizarre decision. The Warriors seemed to swarm Lillard on the other end of the floor. Steph went off and Dame was way off. He had 7 turnovers in the 4 matchups, the 4 regular season matchups. He had 6 turnovers total, and he had 7 turnovers in game one. Jamie, you wrote last night that we might be getting a little bit of like New Orleans Pelicans flashbacks from last year.
That is how I felt, Tom, and especially because Alfred Camino and Maurice Harkless were not able to knock down any open threes, and so it really did feel like the New Orleans series. But the thing is, I really believe that there's going to be a lot of changes in game two. There has to be for the Blazers. But as far as Dame, when they're swarming Dame, I think Coach Stotts is going to go with maybe some more Rodney Hood, because Hood's been a really consistent offensive player for them. So I think there could be some rotation changes as far as who's getting more minutes, because you got to have shooters on the floor with so much attention on Dame. And that's what they learned against the Pelicans. So I could see them kind of changing up some rotation minutes in game two.
Yeah, last night, Kevin Pelton from ESPN, he tweeted out this incredible stat from Second Spectrum that the Warriors blitzed 12 mm-hmm. Blazers picks in game one, tying their season high. The only other time that they blitzed that many picks, meaning they send a double team out high on the pick and roll, the only time they had 12 was against Portland back in December. They almost never do this, but they pull that trick out of their bag last night mm-hmm. or in game one. And 9 of those 12 blitzes in the pick and rolls were against Damian Lillard. So a great moment in the playoffs last night. We got spicy Terry Stotts. Anthony Slater of The Athletic asked Terry Stotts after the game, the decision to not swarm Steph like the Rockets did in the previous series. And Logan, what happened?
Man, I think he wanted to run the fade with Anthony, man. That was hilarious. He just said that. I think he asked him back and forth. I wasn't in the room when that happened, but I saw the reaction. It was funny. But, I mean, it happens to the best of us. But basically, he was just like, he asked the question, did the Rockets swarm Steph? The answer is yes. And what happened when the Rockets swarmed Steph? He still scored 33 in the second half, and they won the game. So, you know, a little bit of frustration. But what I will say, though, is, I mean, I get maybe sagging off, but they had Kanter in the paint. And you were just getting right off of screens. If Steph got a screen, he was wide open. And it doesn't matter if it's Stephen Curry or if it's anybody else in the league. If you leave the NBA player who can shoot that wide open, he's going to make it every time and take advantage of it. So, I mean, I guess I get sagging, but not sagging that far down the paint.
It was weird because they didn't sag against, like, Jamal Murray in the previous series. Mm-hmm. So that's what was killing me. They weren't sagging that much. So I just don't see it happening again in game two.
I was just going to ask you, where did that come from? Where did this coverage come from? Was it like a mistake? Was it like last-minute decision? What happened?
I think it was more of the Blazers weren't worried that the Warriors' bigs were going to shoot from out there. So they were more like, oh, it's okay. The big isn't going to shoot it, so you can sag off a bit. But I'm not sag off that much. And it was weird to me seeing how different – they were defending that pick and roll when they already had to go through that with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. But that was the thing. Jokic could hit the three, so they were out a little bit more. You know, they were on the perimeter. But this is friggin' Steph Curry, so you can't do that. And I know it's going to change in game two.
Yeah, it's just bizarre because if I was Anthony there in that press conference, and look, I'm not one to begrudge anyone who's put on the spot like that, but I would have been like, first half, how many points did he score? You know,
yeah. I have breaking
zero
news,
points
guys.
In the
I have
first
breaking
half.
News. I have some breaking news. Apparently, Terry Stotts opened his presser and asked, if Anthony Slater is here, I'd like to apologize to him.
Wow.
That happened in San Francisco. I am perusing Twitter right now, and that just happened. So,
no,
I'm
you
in.
Gotta double
and,
down.
And Slate, to his credit, it was like, it's cool, man. I didn't, you know, so they've made amends.
Oh,
I guess.
Man. I wanted him to double down and just make light of it. Jamie, how often do we get that sass?
Not very often. And that's what we were all talking about, all the Portland reporters. Like, ooh, okay. Now, you know, I mean, it's rare that we see that. So that I like that side of Terry's thoughts. I kind of want to see a little bit more of that extra sauciness.
Yeah, it was great. And I thought that, you know, Stotts, no one likes to get beat by 20. No one likes that, especially when you come off of two series
right.
like that. They go into Denver. They drop game one against Denver. They play at high altitude. They, you know, you have the Ramadan thing with Enes Kanter. They're exhausted. Mm-hmm. They play four overtimes in game three. They're probably a little ornery, like grumpy. We've all been there when you're traveling all the time and then someone just snaps at you like a question. And you just, like, bite their head off for no reason. I like that about Terry Stotts, but it also points to this thing I want to get into here. Is this just a case of that Portland's just tired, Jamie? Like, that they're just – that they are fatigued after that last series? They had to go 36 hours from Game 7, an afternoon game, to coming in on a Tuesday night after the draft lottery. Is this a matter of fatigue? Do you think there's a lot of that here?
I think there's a little bit of that. But like you mentioned, Tom, the Blazers lost to the Nuggets in game one. And it wasn't a very pretty game besides Dame having 39. He kept them in it. And I kind of feel like the Blazers just always kind of need to get that one game under their belt and then figure out and watch game film and be like, okay, here's what we need to do and how to change things up. But obviously there is a lot of fatigue. And, I mean, I don't think people realize how mentally that 4-overtime game, like, took so much out of them. And I know it was, what, a week and a half ago? I don't know. All the days blend together for me, too. But I think that almost it's like a more of a mental fatigue right now than a physical, which seems weird, but this team, man, I think game two is going to be so different because of how now the Warriors are like feeling confident, and you can tell me otherwise, Logan, but I feel like they're like, okay, yeah, this is going to be a lot easier than our series against Houston. Like, that's just the vibe I've been getting. And obviously with Coach Kerr saying last night, hey, we can play a lot more of our bench guys, and he said because of matchups.
Yeah.
No, that was more like, well, we think we're going to, like, just roll through this one.
I mean, I can say this. I think that, I mean, the Rockets series, it seemed like, by all accounts, was their Western Conference Finals. You know, it was there.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell just in, even in the Warriors' blowout of the game in game one, they were still having mental lapses on the defensive end. One thing that comes to mind is when the, you know, when the Blazers came back in the third quarter, and there were just mental lapses like getting an offensive rebound on a missed free throw and Roddy Hood getting a three. You know, they weren't as sharp as they needed to be. And, you know, they just came off an exhausting second round series. And I think it just shows the gap between these two teams is the Warriors really didn't play their best game. Tuesday night. They didn't play their best game and still were able to have a comfortable lead throughout. So, you know, I think that they see this as, you know, we have to get through this. We have to battle against complacency with ourselves in this series.
Yeah, I don't see Steve Kerr going deep in the bench if they get popped in the second game of this series, right? Like, I almost feel like this was a shot across the bow for Portland. It's just like, yeah, we can go 10 or 11 deep against this mm-hmm. Portland team. Different matchup here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what how I took it, right, Jamie?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was really funny because I got to hear a lot of reporters down here talk about, oh, how Steve Kerr was trying to be nice to the Blazers. And I think the players are going to hear that, feel that. And, I mean, when you have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum hearing that kind of stuff, we've seen it. It motivates them even more.
No, what was funny about that exchange is that Steve Kerr got asked about that again. Like he got asked to follow up on that notion of why he can play so many guys. He said matchups, but it seemed like he was flustered in the way that he was asked that question, you know, asked a follow up, like he wasn't expecting it, like, oops, I don't know. So it was very weird for him to say something like that. It could be ammunition. I mean, I know Dame is from the town, so definitely doesn't need any extra motivation. But if he can get it, it would definitely be in that quote.
Dame just said after the game that it was tough. Just he felt – I don't think he admitted directly that he was tired. I don't know if many superstars do that. But I think he alluded to the fact that after that Denver series coming into this and having all the bodies thrown at him in this game, it was exhausting. And I think a lot of times Dame was trying to cut into the crease of the defense and try to pass out of it. He could do that against Denver, but the Warriors' length and the IQ defensively and the activity defensively and the energy, I mean, I think that's what was the big difference between this series and Denver is you got a rested Warriors team, a fired-up Warriors team that won on Friday night against Houston, and they get a couple extra days off, and they also get the just kind of, I don't know, an emotional return for a certain player who tore his pectoral muscle, 5 months ago? And Logan, you wrote on that. How important is that, and not necessarily in this series, but for the team, getting Damian Jones
back is pretty crucial, especially since we don't know when we're going to get DeMarcus Cousins back. We don't know when the Warriors are going to get DeMarcus Cousins back. And I know there's been reports out there that he could come back in this series, but the guy hasn't run yet. He hasn't been on contact. So in the meantime, Damian Jones is a really good piece to young piece. He can spread the, he can help spread the floor with his alley oops, and being a rim, and being a rim protector at times and blocking shots. He's probably one of the most athletic guys on this roster. So if they can get him back playing good minutes, it could be nothing but a boost to get time away from Draymond Green, to get time away, get them to get those rests, and get time for Boga to get rest. It could be really good to get Damian Jones in, not even for that many minutes per game, probably just maybe 15 minutes here and there to get Draymond a blow and to get these defensive guys a blow. If he can do that, you know, the Warriors, you know, will be pretty happy with the result, especially since he hasn't been – some didn't expect him to be back this soon. So that is, yeah, that is good.
That's big. They need the energy. Jordan Bell, too. I mean, that's kind of the thing, is not only if you can survive those minutes with the bench guys, that's huge, because not only do you survive, but you also get rest for the other guys. And I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I think part of the strategy of getting these guys out there is to give Draymond some rest, give Klay Thompson some rest, Steph some rest, and try to, you know, have some more fuel left in the tank for the finals. Look, I think all the energy on the boards is going to be huge in this series, because that's where the Achilles heel is for the Warriors. When they're starting, you know, Andre Iguodala, like, they could get crushed on the boards like they did against with P.J. Tucker. With Bogut out there, it's a little different. I mean, Enes Kanter is going to be the fulcrum of this series. If he can punish the Warriors on the boards, get offensive rebounds, grab those defensive rebounds and outlet to Damian, let him get out in transition and operate in space rather than having to operate against a set defense, I think that's going to be huge. And Kanter, like, didn't have a bad game. And I think a lot of people, what we do when we see these highlights, when we see Steph Curry pulling up from 30 with no one in front of him and Kanter's just hanging out in the paint, we kind of we clown on these guys a little too much. But I think Kanter, like, I think he in many ways is going to be the key to this series for Portland, because if he can punish them on the boards, that's huge. That's huge against the Warriors team that doesn't want to have to fight for every single rebound. What do you think of Kanter's role in this series, Jamie?
Oh, Tom, I completely agree. And I have never seen him miss so many putbacks. I mean, not just Kanter, but the Blazers as a whole. And it was weird, too, because against the Nuggets, against Jokic, Kanter, they were getting the ball to him down low, and we didn't see that at all in game one against the Warriors. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't you do that against this smaller team? Like, I get it, Draymond's pesky and Kanter's pretty slow, but still get him on the block, get him some touches. So I think not only rebounding, but just try and get him more involved. And I know that the pick and roll is like the Blazers' go-to, and I get it, but that was more so because when they had Yusuf Nurkic, that two-man game between Dame and Nurk was working so well, so they just kind of keep going with that. And I just don't think that's Kanter's strength. So I'd like to see them kind of use Kanter differently when they are set in their offense. But I expect game two for him to get some more putbacks and actually finish them too.
Yeah, it was odd. Like, after the game, speaking of pick and roll coverage, it was like, I think I saw it from The Athletic, some quotes from Evan Turner saying it's really hard to switch pick and roll defense with this team. I've been harping on it for 3 years to switch up. It seemed like they're a little bit more vocal in the locker room, Jamie, about, you know, strategy going into game two.
Yeah, they were really vocal, and I liked how, you know, Dame was saying that, hey, their defense, they know they've got to change it on Steph. And I mean, CJ McCollum flat out said, like, there was nothing good about how they defended the Warriors pick and roll. So maybe Coach Stotts doesn't want to admit it, but the players are, you know. I'm, like, eager for game two to tip off and see what kind of changes they make.
Yeah, Logan, what are some of the things that you think can hurt the Warriors here in game two?
I think it's the same thing that's hurt them all season long. I think it's complacency. I think that if they continue to play, you know, the way that they, in some, at least had the mindset that they had in game one, of, you know, constantly getting down and blitzing pick and rolls and using their length to their advantage, they can win this series easily, in my mind, either four or five games. But if they show the complacency that they did earlier in the playoffs against the Clippers, you know, losing 31 point leads and things like that, this could be a longer series than we anticipated. And Damian Lillard, we all know that he can go off. We all know that CJ can go off. But I do think that the Warriors are obviously the better team, even without Kevin. And if they can, you know, fight off that, you know, the lack of focus and complacency, I think that they should be fine. But if they can't, then we've seen what happened in the past.
What is the status of Kevin Durant, and what's your intuition on the situation of when he'll be back and whether there's gamesmanship going on here?
I think that, obviously, I think he's out for game two. But I think that it's also a wait and see. I think Steve Kerr always likes to have a guy have a workout in or at least have a practice in before he gets on the floor, and that's including Kevin. And as long as they keep winning, this could stretch out a little bit longer than anticipated. I think just to get him right all the way right, if they're up 3-0, there's really no reason to just rush him back. You want him as healthy as possible, especially going into if they, you know, are able to go into the finals. You want a healthy Kevin Durant. So I think that they're being really cautious, just like they are with DeMarcus Cousins. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But for sure not in game two. And we'll see how the series progresses.
Was he there for game one?
I'm not sure. I didn't see him walking around. It's obviously seen some of his people there, but I didn't see Kevin Roman Oracle.
Yeah, because I didn't see him on the
podcast. Not to say he wasn't there, but I didn't. Yeah, he wasn't on the bench for sure. I don't know if he was in the building, but I could be wrong. I don't. But I didn't see him.
Oddly enough, like the national conversation around the Warriors right now is all about Steph. Like he went off. He went off and was just incredible in game one from the jump. You know, I think at the end of the first half, it was like watching 2015 again. And of course, in the end of the game against Houston, when I was there, it was ridiculous how confident he was, how he didn't let the first half get to him, and he just ripped the throats out of the entire Houston team. And the numbers are astounding. I tweeted this out after the game that, you know, he's averaging 46 points per 48 minutes without Kevin Durant on the floor this postseason. I think it's cliche, it's narrative that he's better without Kevin Durant. But what's your perspective on this as someone who's been in the trenches with them all season long? Does Steph talk about this, like that he's a different person or a different player without him?
Anytime there's notion of like him and Kevin, maybe, you know, a difference of if Kevin's off the floor, he's playing better without Kevin, he kind of shoots that down most times. I do feel like there is more of a freedom of movement when Kevin isn't on the floor for Steph to kind of maneuver, and you kind of saw that in the second half of game six. But for the most part, I think that, you know, he's trying to coexist as much as he can with Kevin. And but when he does play like how he does, it definitely gives throwback vibes for sure. I remember being in a building back in the day when he would go on those little runs. And but I do think that he also appreciates, you know, when Kevin is on the floor, because let's be honest, you know, when this all looks nice when Steph is doing this, but it's a huge burden for him to carry this offense, you know, night in and night out, especially without at the level that he's doing it. So I think there is a freedom movement, but I do think he is, you know, like most of the pretty much all of the team is, you know, ready to have Kevin back whenever he's ready to come back.
Yeah, I thought they made a concerted effort after the Houston series to harp on the fact that he's the best player on the team, best player in the league, and just kind of pump him up, because it's easy to run with the narrative of, yeah, we don't need that guy. We can win. We can go back to 2015, 2016 when we won 73 games. It's back to those days, but it's a tightrope walk for that team, I feel like, because KD does offer them so many different things, offensively, defensively, just in terms of intimidation of having to go against that dude. But I do think there's a little bit of energizing effect. I remember Steve Kerr a couple years ago when Steph got hurt. I think it was an MCL injury, not in the playoffs. I think earlier in the season, maybe it was an ankle, and people were like, oh, like this must be terrible. Steph's hurt, and what are you guys going to do? And he was like, actually, this is probably pretty good for us. Like, this is good. Like, I think it's good to kind of get, you know, shake off some boredom and kind of change things up. And we need to face some adversity to wake up a little bit. And I feel like with this Warriors team, that's kind of the kick in the pants that you needed for them not to, like, fall asleep at the wheel with the Houston Rockets. Is like, I think it energized them somewhat. I think it did.
Definitely.
The TV cameras were all over Dell and the Currys basically every time Steph or Seth did anything. What is some interesting stuff from you guys that people from the outside don't get to see about the relationship between those two, or a little anecdote in this series about those two and the Curry family?
Not to just give a plug, but I do want to give a plug to our guy, Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area. He is actually, I don't know if it's out there, but he's about to have something out with both Dell and Sonya. So I think that you're really going to get a chance to see that dynamic that you are asking about. But, you know, I think this is a really tight-knit family. I mean, I think that a lot was talked about the coin flip and, you know, who was going to wear which jersey. But Sonya came out with the old-school split jersey. She had on the front, I think it was Seth's Blazer jersey, and on the back it was Steph. So I think this is a really close-knit family. Obviously, they want to win. Both brothers want to win, but I think the family would be cool with either result. You know what I mean? And I think that right after the game in the bowels of Oracle Arena, you could just see they were all huddled up. There was after the game, it was Sonya, it was Sadell, it was Damian Lee was there, Steph, and they were all kind of huddled up. Even after the game, they were all chilling and talking just outside the Warriors family room. And I think that kind of shows, even with the stakes of this series, that they are still a tight-knit family.
I was thinking, I think it's really cool for the parents, but I know Seth is kind of over it, you know, like that storyline. Yeah. I mean, after game one, he was like, yeah, you know what? I play against my brother a lot. And I think even Steph said that too. So it's really cool for them as a family, but I think the players are actually like, okay, we're done talking about this. Like, that's the vibe I get.
This is weird how big the Curry family is in the NBA, right? Like, last series, we had Austin Rivers, who is engaged to Steph's... Austin Rivers, his sister, is engaged
his
to...
His sister yep. is engaged to Seth.
Yes.
And they have a kid together. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy how big the Curry... Like, they own the league!
Yeah. I think Steve called them the royal family. Yeah.
That's great. And I just think back to, like, when Riley Curry was taking over, when Steph's daughter was taking over those press conferences, and how much everyone loves Riley. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's you know, we're going to see a lot more of this. You know, Cole Anthony, Greg Anthony's kid coming through the league. I wrote this big feature at the All-Star break about how second-generation players, and I'm going to plug two here, Logan. You kind of broke the seal there, so The story I did at the All-Star break was that second-generation NBA players are way on the rise. When Steph Curry entered the league, guys, there was 9 players who were the son of an NBA player. Now there's like 30. Just over the past like 9 years, ever since Curry came into the league. So this is going to happen and keep happening. Wow. And, you know, I think what people don't realize is how impactful Sonya is. Because the mothers in these relationships have just as much impact DNA wise. Sonya is an amazing athlete. She was played volleyball at Virginia Tech.
She was a beast, yeah.
And what was that? She hit like the half court shot there at the All Star game. I mean, the whole place went nuts.
Underhand.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So with the rise of female sports in the '90s and even before that, like, you're gonna see these super couples. Create some amazing, amazing NBA players one day. And it's just incredible to watch. Like, every time they play the Currys, like Steph Curry plays someone, I'm like, wait, isn't he related to that person over there? And I'm sure Steph and Seth are like tired of this at this point, but it's super cool to see. I'd imagine that Seth's going to have his big moment here. You know, as a little brother, I'd imagine he just feels like this is, you know, yeah, I gotta punch back, right? Like, Seth Curry, when he's going well, yeah, the Blazers team is so much better when they get the production off the bench, mm-hmm. especially when you have Aminu just not really providing that punch in the starting lineup. Just only 1 3-pointer, kind of the canary in the coal mine for the Blazers. When he has just 1 3-point attempt, Aminu, that's not good. That's not a good sign for their offense. And if Seth Curry can show up and get 20 for this team, or even 15, that's going to go a long way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Seth and Rodney Hood. I just think the Blazers bench can be, they're not so consistent, but they can be so much better than what the Warriors bring off the bench. And so for me, I'm thinking once you have Steph and Clay sitting out, that's when you need to take advantage. And it's interesting because we saw in Game 7 against the Nuggets, Stotts decided to sit Aminu and Harkless, and he started Hood and Zach Collins. I'm not saying I see that starting lineup change, because I know Stotts is very key on keeping that all together, but you got to get more shooters out there, like you said, Tom. You can't rely on Aminu's three-point shooting right now.
Right, and that's the thing that, to your point, Jamie, that was the thing that the Clippers really took advantage of, is when when the Warriors started and went to the bench, that's when they balled out, and that's when they got back in the game and even made leads when Kevin was off the floor, when Clay was off the floor. When you get into that second unit, that's been the Achilles of the Warriors all season long, is you get them when they're Hall of Fame caliber starters are on the bench, and that's if there is something that the Portland Trailblazers can adjust to with this team and kind of get them is off of their bench, and that's going to be a test for the Warriors.
Lastly, I want to hit this because I'm not from the Bay Area. I don't know Dame Lillard on a personal level. So tell me how central this Oakland thing is for Dame and for the Warriors to not let Dame get off in this series.
I mean, Dame kind of said this after the game that he could literally walk to where he's to walk to his childhood home from the Coliseum, and that's literally true. I mean, I remember I spent some summers in Brookfield, at the Ira Jenkins Community Center at Brookfield on 98 and Eads, and it's literally you can see the Coliseum from there. And so Dame is a guy that has seen Warriors basketball that when we were growing up, I mean, me and Dame are obviously different in age, but when I was growing up, Coliseum was the place where cool things happened. That was like the only spec where it seemed like Oakland was on the map. If you did it in the Coliseum, that was a big deal. That was before Steph was there. That was even before What We Believe. If you made it to the Coliseum, it was like our little Hollywood, and that was where NorCal championships were and things of that nature. So if you did something big, it was going to be either at the Coliseum or it was going to be at Oracle Arena. And so for Dame to show out one last time, I know that's going to mean the world to him, and that's going to mean the world to, East Oakland in general. So that's something that the Warriors are going to have to focus on. They're going to have to focus on Dame going to always have a chip on his shoulder, but to do it in Oracle Arena for the last, Western Conference playoff series in that building, that's going to be a big deal for him. So, the Warriors got to find a way to combat that energy.
Yeah, I mean, he called it before Game 1 a storybook moment to play in his first Western Conference Finals at Oracle and Oracle's last year. It's always really, really great to listen to the stories that he has of him visiting Oracle. And one story he talked about on Monday was that, I think it was in fourth grade, he and his buddy had kind of got by security, because security was not really a big thing back then. It was like no big deal. And they were in the tunnel area, and they found this gym bag, and they were like, oh, what's in here? And it turned out it was the mascot, who at the time was the Thunder, I guess the mascot's name.
It was Thunder,
and
yeah,
they were
Thunder,
like, oh, yeah. Wow, this is the Thunder mascot. Like, they thought it was so cool. And then Dame said this bald guy came running around the corner like, hey, get out of there, that's my stuff. And they were like, no way, that's Thunder? Like, they couldn't believe that this bald guy. I guess they didn't expect him to look like this. And just hearing Dame talk about that, it's so funny. He's got so many awesome memories being at Oracle. And so, yes, I'm with you, Logan. That's the top of Dame's list is to do one more memorable thing here in his hometown.
Yeah, it's incredible. Lots of storylines here. I think we're going to see a much different game two. If we know anything about this Blazers team, they're resilient. They bounce back after losing game one against Denver. Dame is not going to let this happen. Seven turnovers, season high seven turnovers in game one. Just didn't have it going. But I think you're going to see a different Dame. You're going to see a different team out of Portland for game two. Logan, Jamie, really appreciate you guys taking the time here. I know it's been a busy several weeks here at the end of the NBA season, but thanks so much for joining us. You can find Jamie Hudson at the NBC Sports Northwest. go down the download the My Teams app to get all of her stuff. Follow her on Twitter as well. You got Logan Murdoch at NBC Sports Bay Area covering the Warriors. Awesome stuff for both of you. Thanks so much for joining.
And there you have it. Thank you to Tom Haberstroh and Jamie Hudson for joining us today. You can find all our work on the My Teams app. Find this podcast on the My Teams app, as well as Spotify, iTunes, and wherever podcasts are. So thanks for subscribing, and we'll talk to you soon.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.